Aloha and welcome to Elevating Motherhood. I'm so glad you're here. I'm your host, Lori Beth Aldridge. I've taken my passion for conversation, perspective, and supporting moms and turned it into a podcast. My goal is to talk openly about motherhood, offer new ideas, and help moms find their confidence in this busy and sometimes overwhelming world we live in. We're going to dive deep, open up, and elevate motherhood. Thanks for being here with me. Let's get started. Aloha, mamas. It's so nice to be back with you. Oh my gosh, it's winter here in North Idaho, and there has been so much happening. I am co-hosting the second annual Focus Retreat with my good friends Jennifer Ford Berry and Amy Debrick in Harrodsburg, Kentucky. We are actually going back to Shaker Village to host the second annual retreat. Oh my gosh, it was so magical last year. We loved it so much. The VIP event, the lake, the talks, the attendees, these women all came, each one of them by themselves. They did not bring a friend. They came by themselves. They carved out time and space for them to sit down, focus on their business, on their life, all areas of their life. We really take a holistic approach with the Focus Retreat and try to honor the individual women who go, as well as all the individual areas of each person's life. So here we are as moms, you get it. We're trying to find the balance in our marriages, in our business, in our personal life, in our parenting, in our friendships, and it is a lot. And so how do we show up with consistency of character in all of those different facets of our life? I believe that that is where the balance is found. I also think that it's a lot for us to sit around with our daily and weekly and monthly to-do lists and the regular daily grind and try to figure it out. So we created the Focus Retreat so you could take time away to hang out with other Christian business owners who are also trying to show up with consistency of character, consider their faith in all aspects of their life, and find that balance. We need time away to take a deep breath, be with other women who get it. At the Focus Retreat, we show up as equals. We are not there as professionals in our field, acting like we are so far advanced from everybody who's attending. They are only there to glean from us. No. Jennifer, Amy, and I, we are hosts of this event. And we show up and we pour into you with beautiful, rich workshop-type lectures. We break bread together. We have fun together. We go shopping together. We just take a deep breath together. And we glean from one another. And it's such a beautiful thing. And I want you to be there too. So if this is an event that sounds super awesome to you, I want to hang out with you at Shaker Village in Kentucky this September. You can find out more and reserve your seat at thefocusretreat.com. That's thefocusretreat.com. And if you are not ready to commit to a ticket just yet, be sure to sign up for our email list, because it is not just some sales funnel. It is Amy, Jennifer, and I showing up on a regular basis to encourage you in your inbox. Yes, we want you at the event. Yes, you know that. That is why you signed up for the emails. And we are going to pour into you. We are going to be generous with our advice and our encouragement, and we're just so happy to have such amazing women like you to be part of our Focus community. Go to thefocusretreat.com and sign up for our email list or buy your ticket today. This is a high energy conversation today, mamas. For some reason, it's a highly political at the moment to talk about boys, men, gender, and masculinity. And here we are as moms, right smack dab in the middle of the over-politicized nonsense, trying to have meaningful marriages with our husbands and raise our sons well in a world that loves to bash boys and men. But the truth is, these are boys and men that we love, that are close to us, that are near and dear to our hearts. They are our family, the loves of our lives. And it's hard to tolerate that level of bashing. We need to talk about the tension that exists in our culture right now, both the undercurrent and the outright hatred toward men. We need to stand up for our sons and raise them up at the same time. In this interview, you'll hear me tell the story about how when I found out I was pregnant at 40, I knew I was going to have a son. I knew I was going to be called to speak out about the war on men happening in our current culture. And here we are. My guest today is Dorenda Wilson. She has been on the podcast before, and I am so stoked to welcome her back. She is a personal friend of mine and also a brilliant writer and podcaster. I look to her for a lot of homeschool and parenting advice. She speaks out on this subject with so much grace and encouragement. Her perspective really takes the charge off our current cultural messaging and puts tools and encouragement back in the hands and hearts of moms so we can show up well in our marriages and in our motherhood. You'll leave this conversation feeling equipped as a boy mom and have a better understanding of what true masculinity is. Dorenda Wilson has been married to Daryl for 34 years. He wanted 2 kids and she wanted 10, so they compromised at 8. Dorenda has over 30 years of homeschool experience. She also has 11 grandchildren, 7 of whom are boys, who are also being homeschooled. During her years of experience in home education, she has seen firsthand how kids learn naturally and effectively when they are given time and space, along with encouragement to trust their own learning processes. She wants to take this hard-earned wisdom and mentor moms. She believes an encouraged mom is always a better mom. Dorenda began the Dorenda Wilson podcast for this purpose back in July of 2017, and that podcast grew very quickly and gained recognition with both families and leaders in the homeschool community. Dorenda has over 500 episodes to choose from and boasts over 3 million downloads. This podcast episode is absolutely not homeschool specific, but Dorenda is a huge voice in the homeschool community. So if you have not connected with her yet via her podcast or her books, I highly recommend that you do. I will link to those in the show notes for you. So without further ado, let's welcome back the encouraging Dorenda Wilson to the show. Aloha, Dorenda. Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for being here again.
I am excited to be with you today. I think we're going to have a great conversation.
Oh, yeah. We always do, but now everyone else gets to listen in on them.
Right.
That'd be good. Well, you have been on the show before talking about your other awesome book, The 4-Hour School Day. So good. So good. I mean, I cannot recommend it enough. I tell people about it all the time. But now you've written another book that I get to tell people about all the time. And I had the great honor and privilege of reading it before this interview. And oh my gosh, it's powerful from the beginning. I cried at the end. It was so good. But before we get into that, I would love for my audience to know more about you in your own words. What's new since the last time you were here?
Well, we've got a few more grandkids. I'm still married to the same man. It's been 34 years now. And my husband, Daryl, we've been married for 34 years, and we have our 11th grandbaby on the way. Nice. We don't know whether it's a boy or a girl, but out of all the rest of them, 7 are boys. So, and then we have our own family where my husband and I had 8 kids and 5 of those were boys. So we're kind of boy heavy in this family, which is one of the reasons I wrote the book that I did. And we've been homeschooling for over 30 years, and we have one still left at home. He's kind of taking his time finishing up, and that's totally fine. It's the joy of homeschooling. And I've written a few books and I have a podcast. And so I sort of take that work, and I was telling someone the other day, I sort of like stuff it in the cracks, you know, in between being a grandma and a mom and a wife and, you know, having a son on the spectrum and helping him with his things and cooking and laundry. I still do all those things, you know. I think sometimes people look at us and go, oh, you're podcasting, how wonderful, you know. And it's like, oh no, when I'm done here, I'm going to go in and fix dinner and fold laundry.
Totally. I'm on my 3rd round of dishes. I went to the grocery store yesterday knowing that this interview was at lunchtime, my time today, so we could have easy lunch. Yes. It was satisfying that they would eat so they wouldn't come see me halfway through the interview and say, I don't really like that, or I'm still hungry. Like, they have plenty of food. They're all set up for success. They've had their outdoor times. It's yeah. And then I'm going to go do more laundry. Like, yeah.
And as soon as we're done here.
Which, sidebar, I went to Mom's Night Out last night, and I'm just telling you this because it's a funny story. And I had prepped dinner for my husband to make it really easy for him, and he sends me a photo. My dog Odin let himself in the house and ate all the dinner out of the pan and got the butter because he has European parents, and we joke that he likes coffee and butter. And he broke my butter dish, and so it was cereal and popcorn for dinner.
Well,
I know.
It was there. That's good. you had a plan B. That's a good thing.
Yes. Well, it made dinner prep easy tonight because it's going to be a repeat of what I tried to make last night because everyone was looking forward to it. So
sure.
It'll be easy after this. Oh, my gosh. Feeding the men in our lives. Oh, boy. I feel like that's partly what your book is about. I mean, Dorenda, why? Why? What prompted this book? Why did you write a book about raising boys to men at this moment in history?
Well, I've interviewed a lot of women on my podcast. I've traveled around the country speaking at conferences. And what I've found is that there are a lot of moms out there struggling to know how to raise and homeschool their boys. And, you know, they understand that there are differences. Like, that's kind of obvious, you know, but they're not sure how to navigate them. You know, we're not men, right?
Right.
So, you know, that difference alone can create such a challenge in understanding our sons. And then in addition to that, you know, we've been immersed in a culture that's become increasingly hostile toward men.
Totally.
And toward God, you know, so mm-hmm. I feel like they kind of go together. And it's no wonder that so many moms are just, they're confused and they're overwhelmed. And I see that. And I just want to help because I look at my life with our five boys and I look back at our journey and our current journey and just how much I have enjoyed them and why I've enjoyed them. That's something that I wanted to communicate to moms, you know, but also recognizing like moms are busy. They don't have a lot of time to read long, lengthy books. So I made this book a simple, mercifully short book mm-hmm. on raising and homeschooling boys so that moms could get through it. But just tried to pack it full of good content. And the one thing that I keep hearing from my pre-readers and my launch team is that as they're reading the book, they're nodding and laughing. And so that makes me really happy because it means that things are resonating with them. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's important because the culture and even the church, we're in a crisis when it comes to masculinity and we're being lied to in all kinds of ways about gender and masculinity. It's, you know, become trendy to hate men. And so mm-hmm. here we are as moms trying to raise our little guys in a world that's pretty hostile towards them in so many ways. And, you know, we want people to like our boys. We want our boys to be likable, but at the same time, what's our goal at the end of the day? And those two things aren't mutually exclusive. Like you can raise a boy who's still a boy and still enjoyable. So, and that's kind of what I wanted to get across to the moms through my book. I want moms to have a little better understanding of their sons and be able to be equipped with the right frame of thinking when it comes to how they're responding to their boys, because it's really easy to react rather than respond because so many times we don't understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Oh, 100%.
So
Why are you finding that?
Exactly. Why did you stick that in your ear? You know? And then being able to respond to that without making them feel stupid for what they did. In fact, one of my sons said, you know, moms need to understand that boys are going to do things that seem really stupid to them, but they're learning from those things. And so basically kind of just let them keep their dignity as they go through boyhood and, you know, as they hit the teen years and all of that. So I try to cover that whole gamut in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dorenda, the shortness of your book, I will say, when you said it was a mercifully short book, I thought, oh no, I don't want a short book from Dorenda. Right. I want a long conversation with Dorenda. I want lots from Dorenda. Oh. And then I read it and I was like, oh wait, this is real great tips. It's really easy to follow. It's easy to reference. So I feel like because of the way that you formatted it, I could just go back easily within the chapters and find the point that I wanted to remember. So I was really, really grateful for that. For me and other busy moms everywhere, thank you so much for that.
You're very welcome.
Oh, it was good because I felt like I could finally get through it. And it was somebody else who understands that, yes, there are differences. I have three girls and then I had a small break and had a boy at 41. Mm-hmm. And I jokingly said, I still sometimes jokingly say, I was a perfect parent until however old my son is, you know, 26 right. months ago, I was a perfect parent. Right. And then I had a little boy. And it's so different. And it's a joke where I'm like, why did you do that? Why are you still climbing that? You fell off of that. And now you're going back. Like, why do you want to do that? How on earth did you figure out that the kitchen drawer handles are a perfect ladder for you to scale the mm-hmm. kitchen cabinets? What mm-hmm. on earth? Mm-hmm. So I'm left shaking my head, trying to understand things and the testosterone differences and all of that. And to me, it is so obvious. And to a lot of moms, it's obvious. And yet here we are in a culture that is trying to sell us this notion of equality. And they're right. missing it. They're missing it. We are equal, but different.
Right,
we're
right.
equal, but different. And by not acknowledging those differences and trying to shove everyone into those categories, it doesn't really work. And then
it doesn't. Mm-hmm. We can respect and encourage manhood and masculinity and equally embrace the strengths of women as well. They're not mutually exclusive.
They're not.
They complement one another. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, you know, it's a beautiful thing. It's a God thing, you know. Mm-hmm. He had a perfect plan and it's still a good plan. And it's just, the culture has just gotten so far off track. And so I think that my hope and prayer is that moms will have the courage to get back, to that perspective that I think mm-hmm. is so important in order to raise, our boys from mm-hmm. boys to men. And obviously we're not doing this by ourselves. I talk about this throughout the book, how important a male role model or dad is in the life of a boy and ways that we can encourage that relationship and how important it is for them to have someone to model and how important it is for us as wives to go to our husbands and talk to them when we're confused, exasperated, wondering, you know, what in the world's happening here? I don't know what he's thinking. So often I have gone to my husband and said, okay, this happened and this happened. And then he did this. I don't understand this. And he will tell me, oh, this is what he's thinking. Okay. All right. That makes sense. And so many times it tied back to this innate desire for them to build, to lead, to protect, to provide, to conquer. They just were doing it poorly or ill-timed or, you know, just wrong place, wrong time kind of thing. But the desire was good. The intention might have been good, but just the actual carrying out needs help, needs our help, needs us to help them learn discernment, help them learn when it's appropriate to do this and when it's appropriate to say this. And mm-hmm. When it's appropriate to roughhouse, when it's appropriate to, you know, do all the gaseous things they love to do.
They find it funny from such a young age. It's shocking.
They do. And it never, ever goes away, ever.
I've noticed that. I, too, am married to a man.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's so funny.
Yep.
It's so funny. The thing I like about your book is what you're talking about, that I understand my daughters because I'm a girl and right, they're girls. Right. And there's a certain level of ease there for sure. And then also just with the differences with boys and girls that they'll sit down at the table and write or do art or read forever, you know, right. And then you talk to boy moms who are like, wow, my son just does not do that. Mm-hmm. And then you bring in society's views of what our role should be, you know, and we as the moms have a huge influence over our homes. And there's a lot of pressure for us to be the leaders and to organize everything and be like, give it, I got it, give it, I got it. And then we're faced with a biological reality that we are female, they are male, and we are different, and we're not going to understand all of their mental stuff. And yet we're charged with being their mother. And yet the mother-son relationship is really important and super special for sure.
It is, for absolute sure.
I love that in your book, you give us that perspective of coming back to those differences, but then functioning within them. Because I'll be honest, when I got pregnant at 40, I knew immediately that I was going to have a son because, and it was very clear to me. I knew I never had any ultrasounds, no tests, no nothing, but I knew that I was going to have a boy because I was going to be tasked with talking about men and the war on men. I just knew it because I was going to have to stand up for my son. My husband can stand up for himself. My dad, my brothers who are, you know, or my brother who's grown, like my brother-in-laws, my uncles, my grandfathers, they can all stand up for themselves, but my son cannot. And I am parenting a boy in the age where people think it's funny to read books. Grown women, if you will, like of dating age, think it's funny to read books titled How to Date Men When You Hate Men. And then they wonder why they can't get a date. Yeah, right? It blows my mind. I'm like,
oh my goodness.
Wow. But then we are the mothers of these boys.
Yes, yes.
And like I said, I understand girl things, the boy stuff, not so much. When it came to parenting your sons, I mean, given all the influence and all this crazy stuff, did you find that you approached parenting your girls and your boys differently?
I absolutely did. I think I grew up with a pretty good, solid understanding that men and women were different and that this was a good thing. So that was super helpful. But even if you didn't grow up with that, you can embrace it from this point forward. So I just want to give that encouragement to any mom who's sitting here going, oh, well, you had a great background. This made it easier for you. And yes, that it was helpful. But I think that it's so important that we as moms understand the differences, like you talked about, and respect those. And some of those differences are things like just using less words and giving quicker, more painful consequences. A lot of times for our boys, it was physical work, exercise. Those seem to be the most helpful. I put them on some sort of physical task when they were provoking each other or just couldn't seem to self-regulate, because boys have a massive amount of energy. You know, I share in the book that by the time they're adults, they have around 2,000% more testosterone than women. And they're born with more to start with, but then as they go into the teen years, it really starts to grow exponentially. And again, that's when a lot of developmental changes are happening in them. And that's something we could talk about if you want to in a little bit. But I just think it's so important that just physiologically speaking, they're different. They use different parts of their brain to approach problems. So my boys are not going to approach a problem the same way as me, which I found actually super helpful. Because I could engage them when I had a problem that I couldn't figure out. Mm-hmm. You know, like something's going on and I'm just like, my brain doesn't work. You know, my brain is good at problem solving in some areas and not in others. I could bring my boys into those situations and ask them, like, I'm really stuck. I don't know what to do about this. Usually it was mechanical or something like that. And oh, they loved that. And they felt like they were important, that I valued their opinion. They felt respected. And it was such a simple thing to do. Almost on a daily basis. Oh my goodness, these groceries are so heavy, you know, even if they're really not. Could you help me bring these in? I could really use your muscles right now. You know, things like that, that really just speak life into their manliness, you know? And I think that as we respect those differences between our boys and us, it's important to understand, it's important to know that we don't have to understand them in order to respect them, but just to be aware of them and to try to respect and honor those, even though, like, I don't understand why my boys think that beating the tar out of each other is so much fun. Like, that is how they bond. And you know, I actually read this in a book. I didn't even read the whole book. I happened to read one chapter, and it was so helpful. They had done PET scans, CAT scans of brains, boys' brains and girls' brains, put them in exactly the same situations and looked at what parts of their brains were working. They were almost polar opposite. So again, our boys aren't going to come at circumstances and situations the same way we are. That might mean that as moms, we have to be a step ahead of them, especially when they're little and they're lacking discernment. Like, I see that curb over there. He's going to try to walk on it and there's an 8-foot drop on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing. This doesn't mean we're helicoptering them. It means we're a step ahead of them going, okay, that could be a dangerous situation. Not sure I'm going to let him do that. Or yes, I'm going to let him do that. And, you know, we'll see what happens. You know your son better than anybody. But I think just having that awareness of those differences. Oh, I was going to get back to my story about the scans. So one of the things that he said in this book was that, you know, how you and I, we sit and chat, we'll have a cup of coffee together, and we walk away and our cup is filled. We just feel bonded and so much closer than before. Mm-hmm. Well, that's how boys feel after they've wrestled with each other or competed with one another. I have always wondered why, you know, those fighting competitions, which I absolutely despise. I cannot watch those things because I keep thinking about their mother and their wife and like, what are you doing to each other? You're going to, you know, by the time you're 50, you're going to be falling apart, you know, all the practical things. But these guys are beating the tar out of each other. I mean, beating each other to a bloody pulp. And then they will get up and hug and be best friends. Like, I do not get that on any level, but that is what some men, a lot of men, are actually capable of. And it's looks terrifying to me from my perspective, but it can be incredibly helpful in a lot of different situations. For instance, when I am super emotional because, for instance, when our son was in the hospital and he had had open heart surgery at, you know, 3 days old, and we didn't know if he was going to make it, and I was just a hot mess. My husband was a rock because he could leave that box. He had the emotions, but he could walk away from those and go into another box and be what I needed during that situation. And then he would go home by himself in the room away from everybody and cry there and deal with his emotions there. I can't do that, but he can. And so that's just one small example of just the wonderful benefits of the way that men are wired and the way that it can be such a blessing to the people around them.
I agree that there are so many benefits and so many positives in the differences, but that starts with acknowledging the differences.
Yes.
And when you talk about, you know, our husbands, because I think that that's really important. That's actually a really important piece of raising these boys to men, is to look to the men in our lives that we do respect and trust and that we get comfort from. And for me, that is absolutely Chris. When I think about Chris, and you're right, I lean on him for that different perspective because he is bringing different strengths to the table. Mm-hmm. And this great, like, everything has to be equal and equal means the same doesn't really work. So I think that a lot of moms end up having some issues with their parenting because it's like they don't want to learn different styles of parenting, if you will, because we're tired, you know, if nothing else, right? And we want to show up the best that we can. And with each child, I mean, I have four, you have quite a few as well. You understand that you're just going to have to do that anyway.
Right.
It is easier when we acknowledge those differences in the children, whether they're boys or girls or extroverts or introverts or how it is they like to learn, auditory, visual, whatever, sensory. We show up for them in that individual way, but I think we can take comfort. What I've learned over the years is taking comfort and showing up with consistency of character and consistency of love for my children. Mm-hmm, and so I think that's where that consistency and ease comes from. If I can just show up as the same person who is also meeting everyone's needs slightly differently. So it doesn't have to be equal, quote unquote. It's different. And I knew I was going to have a son, like I said, and I knew that I was raising dragon slayers in the time of dragons. Mm-hmm. And so I try to keep that in mind and try to equip myself as best I can. And I think one of the best ways to do that is talking with moms who have gone before me, like you, and other moms who acknowledge those differences, because it's in that wisdom that I'm finding truths and applicable parenting strategies, such as use fewer words. But Dorinda, I'm going to have to ask you very directly, like, as a talkative mom, how do I work on this? Like, tell me about this.
I could sympathize with you so much. I am a lover of words. Obviously, I write. I love to write. And it's one of my favorite things to do. And I love choosing just the right words and, you know, describing things so that you paint a picture of them. But anyway, telling stories in a really, you know, unique and fun way that gets people's emotions involved, you know, mm-hmm. and makes them walk away feeling good, things like that.
I feel this.
But I had to lay aside my own need to use a lot of words when I realized that my boys did not respect it. They weren't hearing me anymore. And did you want me to tell that story? Because that
I do, because I thought that was so very good. It's a great example of bringing your husband in, and then yes. also the humility we are faced as mothers.
Right, exactly.
In the best way, with the best outcome.
Absolutely. It's exactly what we need. It wouldn't be necessarily what we choose. Mm-hmm, those can be not the same thing. So the boys, the four boys, we've got two girls, and then we've got four boys in a row. When the fourth boy was born, the oldest boy was five. So I had four boys, five and under, and then two, their older sisters, and then I had another girl and then another boy. So those four boys in a row, they were kind of like, whew, they were the hurricane or what have you. They worked together. They did everything together, good things, not good things. Anyhow, they were teenagers at the time. So they're all teens at the same time, right? And I was giving directives, being the mom, all that, and they just were not hearing me. For days, we had gone on with, I would say something, and then they wouldn't do it, or it was like they didn't hear me. And I was getting so frustrated. My husband said, we tried to go out on dates on a regular basis. So we went out on a date, and I just unloaded on him, told him everything that was going on and how frustrated I was. And he didn't say anything. He just listened like good husband should do in that particular moment. And we got in the car. I remember exactly where we were when it happened. We started to take off, and he goes, you know, I need to tell you something, but I don't want to hurt your feelings. And I said, you know what? I'm ready. Like, I've unloaded. I need something. I have no answers. And he said, you use too many words with the boys, and they don't respect you when you do that. And I thought to myself, Dorinda, you know this. You already knew this, but I forgot. We forget, right? So I went home and I grabbed all four of those boys. And to this day, they will tell you, oh, I remember that, Mom. I thought we were huge trouble. Like, we were so nervous. Oh, gosh, what did we do? So they sat down. I told them the story. And I said, this is what your dad says. Do you agree? And they said, absolutely, Mom. They said, we would rather feel physical pain than listen to you talk. And they were not being disrespectful. They were just mm-hmm. being honest, which is another thing I love about boys. They will be honest with you, but you can be honest with them as well, kind of hit them between the eyes. And they're good with that, you know, just be clear. That's the only thing they ask. And so I said to them, okay, I will do my part in minimizing my words. But if you choose to not pay attention to them after I've done that, made that effort, then I'm going to have, are you okay? I wasn't really asking them permission. It was a rhetorical question. are you okay if I just have some pretty intense consequences if you don't listen? They said, yes, absolutely. We absolutely want that. So the trick for me was I'd be ready to talk, and I would stop myself, hit the pause button, and they had to wait for me. That was the other thing. You know, they still had to wait. I just wasn't talking that whole time. So I would just stop, I'd hit the pause button, and I'd ask myself, what are the most important things I need to communicate right now? And how can I do that in 15 seconds or less? And so it would be like, okay, put this in bullet points. Okay, this is what I want you to do, A, B, and C. That's it. And it felt very strange at first, but it worked like a charm. I don't even remember that I had to actually dole out any consequences, because they so appreciated me minimizing my words and making it easy for them to hear me. And it's interesting, because I shared this online on social media, and you never know what you're going to get back, right? Mm-hmm, well, mm-hmm. It was like 99.9% positive, except for one mom who said, this is ridiculous. I would never do this, because you're just training your son that everybody has to speak to him the way he needs to be spoken to. And what about his wife someday? And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa there. Here's the deal. These guys were teenagers. Like, look at the context of the story. they have all these hormones raging through their bodies. Their part of their brain just isn't working most of the time. Moms, if you have ever had hormones, PMS, perimenopause, menopause, you know what I'm talking about, where you're just like foggy brained. Well, that's them. As they're going through the teen years off and on, and you never know when that's happening. So what they need for us to do is meet them where they're at.
Totally.
And just say, okay, I'm going to do this for you. One, we're respecting the heck out of them. We're saying, hey, look, we're going to get through this together and you're going to have your dignity intact and I'm not going to mock you for this. And I've been here before. So let's figure out how we can do this. In that process, we're also showing them how they're going to allow women to treat them. We talk a lot about how men treat women and how women should learn to, you know, understand how a man should treat them. But the opposite is also true. Mm-hmm. If I am speaking down to my son, I am mocking him. I am constantly frustrated with him. I don't respect him. I don't work with him. He's gonna choose a woman who might do one or all of those things to him for the mm-hmm. rest of his life. Is that what we want for our sons? Absolutely not. We want them to marry women who are strong. We, of course, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, women have just an amazing ability to be, especially relationally strong. That's where we really offset the men really, really well. We match up with them really well. But we want to show our sons, this is what it looks like. This is what a healthy relationship looks like. There's give and take, and I'm willing to do my part to help you through this. So now fast forward, as they get past that, developmentally, you know, the frontal part of lobe of their brain isn't fully developed. I think it's until like 25 years old, somewhere in there.
I believe it.
So there's still a certain amount of boyness to them mm-hmm. and immaturity until they're about 25 years old. And so that's not their fault. That's just the way they're wired. The good news is that there's still a lot of good wiring and training that can happen during that time before it's sort of set in stone. So, all that to say, they'll get to that point where they're able to take in more words. And it happens before 25. Three of my boys have been married long before 25. All three of them have very verbal wives who love to talk and love to explain themselves. They're actually really good communicators. And they handle it just fine. They have no issues with it. They do great with it. So in case that was flying through your mind, don't even go there.
Well, it's just so interesting. It speaks to our culture too.
It does.
And just like backwards thinking of mm-hmm. it's not training your son in that way. It's it is exactly what you said, respecting and honoring and loving you where you are.
Right.
I mean, women want to be respected and loved and right. honored where they are. In
exactly.
their whole lives, they want mm-hmm. to be that regardless of where they are in their cycle every month, you know, mm-hmm. they want to be all of these things. And well, they change. Everybody changes and grows, hopefully. And it's the yes. people who don't that, you know, really do suffer and
absolutely
and have a hard time. And so all you're doing is meeting them where they are. And there's no better way, I think, to respect, honor, and love somebody than to meet them where they are and show up for them as they are. And that includes relationships later on in marriages, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
To have unrealistic expectations of like, this is how I want you to be, or this is how you're going to be now. And when you're married, like, it's not the same.
It's not. No, it's not. And really, this so much of this comes back to just such a simple command in scripture to treat other people the way you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that well, as moms, we have to understand what's happening. What's going on with our sons? Why are they acting this way, or why are they having this response? And just have a deeper understanding of that. And then we can do that better. We can treat them the way we would want to be treated in that situation.
Mm-hmm. I love that I was just thinking that same thing. Okay. Like, it's so talking about boys and men, we're talking about parents and we're talking about marriage and
yes,
we're talking
absolutely.
About like, it's both all at the same time. And it's like this balance that we have constantly trying to think of where we are, where they're going to be, where our husbands came from and where they are now and where mm-hmm. we are now and where we're going.
Right. And how do we find that out when in our marriages, right? How do we find out what's going on with their husbands. We ask questions.
Mm-hmm. And also, right? You know, trials.
Right. Trials, of course. And we, and those are the same things we're doing with our sons. We're going to go through mm-hmm. trials with them. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of seeking to understand before being understood is a huge, huge, hugely useful tool, both in our marriages and our relationships with our kids. Like, stuff is going to happen. Our kids are going to do things that we look, and especially our boys, we just think, what in the world? You know, I don't understand any part of this. We can start asking questions. So what were you thinking when you did that? What made you decide to do that thing? And why did you react that way? Or, you know, is there something else going on? Is something else bothering you? Is it really maybe not that, but something over here? And so, and in that process of asking those questions, which I asked our kids loads of questions, we find out more about them. Personally, personality-wise, we also find out where they are developmentally. So it's kind of being, I talk about this a lot, being a student of your children mm-hmm. because they're constantly growing and changing. And so the reason last year for doing something and this year for doing something could be completely different. And so it's an ongoing investigation all the time into what's going on with them. What are they thinking? And this is something that I practiced regularly with our kids. You know, like they would, we had directed learning in the morning with our homeschooling. And then in the afternoon, the kids were self-directed. They were still being productive. We really encourage productivity as opposed to consumer. I mean, we're all mm-hmm. going to consume a certain amount, but really heavy on productivity and just, you know, if you're going to go out and do something out there, let it be productive. It doesn't have to be productive for us. Productive could be, you know, laying on the ground, watching the clouds and seeing the different formations. And, you know, I mean, it could be artistic in that way, you know, so the whole gamut is huge, mm-hmm. but it wasn't about sitting in front of the TV.
Right. Or not being entertained.
Exactly. Not being entertained. So they had this, you know, self-directed learning in the afternoons. And that was a time where they really just a lot of them found their hobbies and their interests and all of that when they had that time. And so I'm trying to remember where I was going with this. And if I do think of it, I will let you know.
You were one-on-one, it kind of goes into, we were starting to transition into like talking to your kids, asking them questions.
Yes. So they would come in, I'd be doing stuff in the house because that was my chance to get some stuff done when they weren't around. And just kind of, there was something about just working alone for just a little while. That was even mm-hmm. if it was just folding laundry, we all know how that is. Just kind of a mental break. And mm-hmm. but they would come in for, you know, I need a snack. I need this or that or the other thing. I need to use the bathroom. But they would come through the room and I would just be like, hey, what's going on? What are you guys doing out there? And I just always asked questions, took interest in what they were doing. And I would ask, you know, I don't know if you know, heard of that game called Vertellus. It's a card. It's a Dutch card game. And Vertellus means in Dutch, tell me more. And so these cards have all kinds of questions on them. And you just sit around the table and you answer the question in front of you. And then when you feel like you're done, someone else will say, tell me more, to get people to open up even more. So I would do this with our kids all the time around the dinner table. So what did you guys do today? I heard you were building this fort thing out there. And Sam said this was going on and that was going on. And then they would just immediately start contributing. And so to this day now as adults, they come into our home and almost immediately will start telling us about what's going on in their lives and where they are. And so we've just got this kind of rapport with them that is just really sweet and precious. And one of the things you guys, obviously, if you don't know me really well or don't already listen to my podcast, you wouldn't know that we live on property and we have our son and his wife and two kids living in a tiny house on one side. We have our 21-year-old daughter in a tiny house living on the other side. We have our daughter, husband, and four kids living downstairs. It's a completely separate unit, but they live down there. And every afternoon at 3:00, they all come to our living room and we turn on music for the kids, you know, Jack Johnson or some happy chill mix or something. And we drink coffee and we talk. And sometimes they are there for 2 hours, you know, and sometimes they come early, sometimes they stay late. But it's just a wonderful way to stay connected. And it starts way back here while we're raising them at home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that so much. And I'm fortunate enough to have seen that played out with my grandma Huck. I have a whole episode about her and how lovely she is and her legacy and all of that. And just the rapport, it's almost like, she lived what she believed, that God always provides for a child. And she was so happy to be around us. And that was at the core. So you walked in that her house into her kitchen and she was feeding you and like right. 3 o'clock coffee, but you know, dinner at noon on Sundays kind of thing. And you just felt so special and like you belonged. And right. when I think about that from the lens of rapport, like that's what she set up for us is like, let me feed you delicious food. Let me hear what's going on with you. Let me tell you funny things. You know, I'm from the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. And and so she would have funny little sayings. She'd say like, I've seen sicker cats than that get well, you know, and just like all these things. And another one she always said was God always provides for a child. And so it was like these things on repeat. And so that was sort of the home that she set up. For her children, for her grandchildren, for her great grandchildren, and that becomes her legacy. So, honestly, I think about your great grandkids one day who might be sitting around having coffee at 3 o'clock and thinking about great grandma D, you know, or whatever, you know, and just that will become part of their thing too. And when we're thinking about raising our sons, we can get caught up in all the societal stuff. We can get caught up in the constant breaking of things and slamming and jumping and climbing and danger and ER visits and all those things. and we can keep in mind that rapport that we want to have with our kids now and in the future, what kind of relationship we want to have. And it can be steeped in that respect and honor and respect for men and expecting, you know, respect in return, but in different ways and different expressions. And I also heard once that curiosity can be a healthy expression of love. And that's what those questions are. They're not just questions. They are expressions of love. I am interested in you. I want to hear what you have to say. Your words matter. Your thoughts matter. What it is you're doing matters. And sometimes I think if we ever feel disconnected or we're not sure what to say or do, asking a question can be an expression of our love for our children. And then just sitting and listening, it goes so far, so far.
It does. And everything you're describing is so simple.
It like is.
You look across social media, you know, the media and internet and everything, and there's just a bazillion things you're being told you need to do as a parent, right? It really comes down to the simple things. It comes down to the relationships. It comes down to the tone that you're setting in your home. What is the spirit in your home? Is there a spirit of peace or is it chaos? And granted, you know, if kids are out of control, there will be chaos. And, you know, there's a certain amount that's normal and it's lovely and it's part of having children. It's the noise of a wonderful house full of children. That's different than arguing, fighting, backbiting, resentment, bitterness, just, you know, and this is why it's so important for us to take the time to work through those things with our kids, teaching our kids how to communicate in a healthy way with each other, knowing that those relationships aren't just temporary. These are lifetime relationships. And all of my kids know that. And they are some very different personalities. In fact, I've had people say, really? You have all these kids? They're all so different. And I'm thinking, what were you expecting? Like little cookie cutter? I don't know. I don't know what they're expecting. Yeah. But they're all very different. So some of them more easily clash personality-wise, but they have grown to love and respect each other's strengths and bear with each other in each other's weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And that's something we instill in them along the way as we take the time to work through the conflicts. You know, obviously not every single conflict has to be a 1 hour ordeal, but if there's an ongoing issue going on, and often it'll be between the same two kids, then you know that that relationship needs something. That's a cry for help. It's a cry. Like I remember when our two oldest, they're both girls, completely polar opposite, still polar opposite to this day. It was like they could not say anything to each other without there being, you know, fireworks. finally, I just sat them down and I said, are you guys happy with your relationship? They were probably like close to teenage, somewhere in there, 12, 14. And they said, no, we're actually not. We hate this. And I said, okay, are you willing to do the work that it takes to make it different? And they said, yeah, we are. And so we started practicing drive-through talking, you know, where we'd sit them down when there was an issue. We'd sit down and I want you to tell her in briefly what happened and how it made you feel. And then I want the other person to tell you what they heard you say. And the first time they did that, it was like, were you even in the same room with this person? Because there had been so much resentment buildup from other situations that hadn't been resolved that we needed to deal with those. And so it took a lot more time to start with. But then as we practiced it, it got quicker and quicker. And the two of them love each other dearly and support each other 100% now as grown women, each with 4 kids, you know? So, so, you know, it's an investment. What you're doing is you're doing the hard thing now because you want to reap that harvest later and you want this for your kids. Like, I think at the end of the day, that's the biggest thing. It's not for us, it's for them. Like, they're going to spend most of their lives as adults. Okay. So, whatever they're learning right now, whatever habits, daily rhythms, relational things that they're learning right now, they're going to carry that into adulthood. And so just being aware of that.
I love that. I don't think you talk about chaos in the book, but now that we're on the topic, I think that it's really interesting that you mentioned that because our world that we live in is addicted to chaos and drama and, and, you know, dramatic headlines and all the things. And if we're not tackling the spirit of chaos that can come from lots of different sources from, you know, let's say the simplistic, like, sibling rivalry, if that's never dealt with, that chaos carries over into our adulthood. I mean, a lot of listeners are going to understand that. Our secular culture also creates a spirit of chaos through confusion by not acknowledging the different gender roles or different sexes and that men are different than girls. And if you try to force everybody into the same category in the name of equality, it's chaos and it's not going to work.
It's ruling by confusion.
Yes.
And You as an individual are no longer in charge.
That's right.
You're now like obeying someone else. That thing that has become your master. And God talks about that in His Word. That, you know, there are a lot of good things out there that need to, you know, even good things. They're meant to be our servant, but when they become our master, they become a bad thing. The whole gender thing, I agree with you. It's a ruling through chaos. And people are no longer, they're not actually making their own decisions anymore. They're serving someone, some other thing, this ideology that they somehow think is going to give them what they want, which is identity and value. And so we as parents have the opportunity to give our kids identity and value so they won't be confused by those ideologies and other things that are going to come down the pike. You know, I was talking to someone the other day on an interview and I said, you know, this whole thing that's going on, it's not going to last because stupidity is not sustainable. Like, what's happening right now is utter and complete foolishness, and it can only go on for a very short amount of time. There's going to be a lot of damage and a lot of fallout. We're already seeing it. But we can shield our kids from that by giving them what we're talking about today, you know?
And it really comes down to the simple things. If we can step outside of that chaos, if you're in the chaos, or there's actually a personality type called Master of Chaos where people create chaos because they don't know how to function without it, you know, and it's just important to be aware of that. Like if you're a person who's coming from that, you know, that's how you were raised or whatnot, but we can pull our kids out of that and go to the simple, but the simple cannot be there in the spirit of chaos. The truth and honoring the individual that is your child And with personality wise, gender wise, all of that, you have to do that and acknowledge that, because otherwise it's an unrealistic expectation by making everyone all the same or whatever it is.
And it creates
a spirit of chaos. But what moms are after is this simplicity. And it comes down to like asking questions, like you were talking about the one-on-one time. I love your take on that in the book. That is worth its weight in gold for sure. Oh my gosh. Just, I was viewing one-on-one time as like taking my kids out one at a time for some sort of special adventure. No, that's not what we're going to do anymore. We're going to, we're going to shift that in our house for sure. To tomato staking. So you all need to pick up the book and read about that for sure. For sure. But it also comes down to honoring our sons, for who they are and what their role is. And, you know, like you said, protector, provider, all of that with employing and exhausting them. I did see a reel on Instagram that talked about this. And instead of trying to fit my son into this like feminine model or make them like their sisters or whatnot, I need to acknowledge that he is an individual, not only in personality, not only in spirit, but like also he is the only son in our house. And I need to honor that and show up for him in that individual way. And I'm trying to figure out how to do that. And the most helpful reel on Instagram was if you want to raise sons and have an easier time doing it, you need to employ and exhaust them. And then you confirmed this in the book too. And there was a quote from Ben Franklin that said, "It is the working man who is the happy man. It is the idle man who is the miserable man." And I see that even in my 2-year-old son.
Absolutely. Boys need a mission. It is essential that they have a mission. Now, some of that time, we're giving them the mission. Sometimes they're creating their own mission. Like for our boys, it was, you know, we were directing in the morning. I was directing in the morning, giving them their missions. And then in the afternoon, they had the freedom to create their own missions. But the three questions that are always going through a boy's mind that need to be continually answered are: who's in charge, who's on my team, and what are we doing? So what's the mission? So when your boy is acting out, I'm not saying it's an excuse, because I do talk about boundaries in the book. I believe discipline is important. I believe it's our job to teach them discernment, when and where is appropriate to do things and not do things and all of that. That takes time. But understanding that, and there I went again, my brain just went off in another direction.
Employing and exhausting.
So this mission thing. So we're giving them the answers to their questions, because when they're acting out, often one or more of those questions aren't being answered.
I actually love those questions because it, again, questions. Isn't that so interesting that questions keep coming up? Questions are the answers.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
It's awesome. Well, here's another question for you. How do we bring dads into all of this? Because the ironic thing is, that's why your book is so simple and doable and so deep too, and really acknowledges all the roles that we have and how they're different, because I'm around my kids more than my husband is, but he is absolutely 100% part of the parenting equation, no doubt. But even with my son being only 2, I sense that he has an understanding and skills that only he can share, meaning my husband, with our son. And I see my son turning to my husband and wanting to be like him. He wants to wear clothes that look like daddy's. He wants to have tools, much to my like danger meter going off chagrin, So, but he wants to be like daddy, and my husband has a lot to teach him. So how do we, in a world that makes moms martyrs and says we do it all and we're the only ones who do anything and dads are useless, you know, it is. It's the underlying message in a lot of parenting stuff and in burnout in moms. How do we bring our husbands in and create space for them and allow them to lead, especially when it comes to our sons becoming men?
Well, you're right. The role of dads and men, good men in a boy's life, can't be understated. It just can't be. And I think that as moms, when we know that, we can be looking for opportunities for them to spend time together. We can be encouraging that. We can be, you know, maybe your husband's going to go to the hardware store.
do you want to take Avery along? You know, something along those lines. Maybe not yet. I mean, he is only two, but, you know, maybe. But, you know, as time goes on, this is what ends up happening is generally in the really early years, we definitely are almost 100% with our little boys. And that's the way God made it. Like it was, I think it's supposed to be that way. But as they begin to grow and develop, get a little bit older and a little bit older, we want to make sure that they're getting that time with their dad or with a good, solid role model. One of the things that I think was just sort of an easy thing that we could make part of our daily rhythm is letting my boys wrestle with their dad in the evenings as part of our evening routine. So maybe we're going to have dinner, we're going to do cleanup, and let dinner settle a little bit. And then there's a point at which my husband was going to chase everybody. He's just going to wrestle with the boys and he's going to do all that for 15, 20 minutes. It wears them out, gets them sort of like headed towards that, okay, now it's time to wind down sort of thing. But they got that physical contact going on with their dad and so bonding with him. That was just a simple thing that we could do in our daily rhythm that would encourage that time together. If they got no other time during the day for whatever reason, they would get that time for sure. But I think for us as moms, just watching, looking for opportunities to give them that time with their dads, with a good role model if they don't have a dad in the picture, or even with other little boys, like being able to do boy things with other little boys. I watch our grandsons. So I watch, you know, they come over every afternoon, not all of them because three of them are in Idaho, but we've got four of them here every day. And one is 9 and the other is 4. And then the other one is 2 and the other one is 19 months. Okay. So the 2-year-old and the 19 month old, those are the ones that have been fun to watch. Mostly parallel play to start with. Then they started interacting more. It started out with wham on the head with something. And then it started moving into more words with each other and more Kai, come. You know, they can hardly talk, but Kai, come. We're going to go do something together, you know? And so it's it and they just, and then like the other day, the 19-month-old grabs the 2-year-old and they takes him down onto the floor and they're rolling around and having the best time. And, you know, they need that. They need that. So there's just a lot of ways that we can, as long as we're aware and we're watching, we're going to find opportunities to be able to do that. And then, of course, throughout the book, I talk all the time, and I mentioned this earlier, about going to our husbands when we're confused, frustrated, don't know what to do with our boys, don't understand them, maybe don't know how to discipline them, because it's like, I don't even know what kind of consequence to give for this thing. No, that this is not in a parenting book, which you will find 80% of the time with boys. Nobody listed that in a parenting book. And so going to our husbands and saying, help me figure this out, you know, and I think that's a wonderful way to bring that influence into your son's life.
It's been really good for us to host homeschool group and mom's group here at my house so that my son has other boys to play with. And ironically, it's like all the boys were born all at once. And we have so many friends who have little boys, including your grandsons. You know, like the irony of this is you're talking about your grandkids over at your house. I'm like, well, your grandsons come over to my house and they get to play with my son. And it works out. And you're right. You're talking about normal developmental stuff too. And just, you know, checking our expectations. If we have an unbalanced expectation that our sons and little boys aren't going to hit or wrestle or be physical or do things like that, that's going to create chaos for them and for us. So I think that's important to remember that normal child development follows that path, and they're going to be simple. Parallel play is a thing. Whacking each other on the head is a thing. Do we set healthy boundaries? Yes.
Yes.
Also, that happens, and we can actually control our reaction to that, and it helps to have it be more simple and doable and set those healthy boundaries like you talk about in your book when we understand that this is normal, typical development in little boys.
Right. We can respond instead of react. And the other thing I want to say, you know, earlier we were talking about having a spirit of peace in our homes. Part of that is
creating a home environment that isn't hostile towards mm-hmm. boys. And I think that can happen really quickly if we're not careful, because we do set the tone in our homes, and it tends to lean towards what we find peaceful or whatever. I'm not saying the boys can have a free for all. I'm saying there's a time and a place for it, and you get to set that because you're the parent. But at the same time, what you want is your boy to want to be in your home. You want that from day one, because mm-hmm. you're going to go through these years, and eventually you want them to want to come back and to want to be in your home as adults. And it starts back here with an environment that's peaceful and yet not hostile towards masculinity and boyhood. That means I have had to give up control on an Easter after I've just served a big dinner to everybody, and all these boys decided to have this war. I mean, these are not little boys. These are teenagers and boys in their 20s. And there is a possibility that furniture is going to break and things are going to happen. They're moving the furniture, hiding behind as Nerf stuff and all kinds of things are being thrown. Eggs, little plastic eggs. This isn't the, you know, oh, we're going to go out in the yard and hunt for the eggs. No, they're pelting each other with these things. I'm just trying to stay out of the way. And I look over at my husband. Reading the newspaper, completely oblivious to all of it. Oh my goodness. Awesome. But it was a great memory, and I got a hilarious video of it. But this is what happens. Periodically, war just erupts, and mm-hmm. you know, you just go, okay, we're having a war.
mm-hmm. Yeah, not everything has to be a heavy.
No.
I think that is something that's so important in parenting in general, is not everything has to be a heavy. Not everything exactly. has to be tickety-boo, and just really mm-hmm. keeping our expectations in check is mm-hmm. is a good thing. And like you said, not being hostile toward boys or masculinity, mm-hmm. and that includes our husbands.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that that's really important. And something you pointed out in your book, and ironically, Chris and I just had this conversation this morning mm-hmm. about men needing encouragement and how mm-hmm. we can do that and how important mm-hmm. it is for us to encourage mm-hmm. them. And I think little boys are no different, and they need their meaningful work and natural ambitions to be acknowledged. They need encouragement. They need to be told when they're doing a good job. And when you see their efforts and how they're helping you, that needs to be acknowledged rather than being taken mm-hmm. for granted, because mm-hmm. I do think that's actually part of the war on men, is that we're taking them for granted while Absolutely. Also putting them down. I mean, that is so discouraging. So we need to be encouraging, because to me, this seems like it might be hard for men who weren't encouraged in their childhood, right, you know, to turn around and then also be encouraging. But then that actually gives our role as wife a lot of meaning too, because we can mm-hmm. be their encourager and show them there's a different way. And I actually think that the best way for me to encourage my son is to encourage his dad.
Absolutely.
And set that example.
So again, we're doing this thing where we're showing our sons what a healthy marriage looks like and how a woman is to treat a man, and mm-hmm. vice versa. But, you know, mm-hmm. the focus for today's purpose is how a woman should treat a man. So how you're treating your husband, you are teaching your son that this is okay. So whatever you're doing, you're telling him this is normal. This is how it works. Mm-hmm. So if you're nagging, if you're not encouraging, versus looking for opportunities to point out what your husband is doing well. It could be just a few tiny little things at this point in the game, but it could be a game changer if you just begin to point those out. Point out what they are doing well or right, or even mostly well or right, mm-hmm. and word it something along the lines of, I really respect this about you.
Oh my gosh.
I respect the way you did this. I respect the way you handled that. Just little things. And mm-hmm. and I'm telling you, that can do an amazing, amazing things for mm-hmm. not only our boys, but for our husbands as well. Mm-hmm. So, because I know that many women out there, there's a certain amount of struggle possibly in their marriages where they're like, I don't really have a lot of respect for my husband because I don't feel like he's doing this, 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 or this. Okay, well, let's set that aside and let's just look at what he actually is doing right. Sometimes going back to why did you marry him? Yeah. Like, what did you find attractive about him? Those things are still there. Like, he might be exhausted and he might be discouraged right now, so you're not seeing as much of that, but you actually have the power to bring that back out in him mm-hmm. by how you speak to him and even just going down memory lane with him. You know, remember when we first met? And I remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I love this about him. You know, it's those little things that we can do to just cultivate that encouragement and cultivate that manliness in our mm-hmm. husbands so that they want to take more leadership. Because I know that's a big complaint amongst women. Well, he's not taking leadership. Well, here's my question. Are you letting him? Or when he does try to take it, are you correcting him? Or you're not happy with the way he's doing it because it's not the way you would do it? So yeah, those are good questions to ask ourselves because we really want to make sure that we are actually truly respecting and honoring them. I know that a lot of moms complain about they're not leading spiritually, but I just want to share a couple of things because I think this is really across the board a struggle for a lot of Christian women. Because I hear about it a lot. He's not taking mm-hmm. the leadership. So what I said before about, okay, well, maybe he's not doing it the way you picture, but is he doing it in other ways that you're not noticing? Because they tend to do things very subtly. Like we don't realize they are actually helping with the homeschooling when yeah. they are sitting around the table talking about economics and politics with our preteens and teens. Okay. That counts. They just don't do it out of a textbook. Okay, it's mm-hmm. not formal instruction, it's natural instruction. And that's more effective than anything. So in terms of the spiritual leadership, here's the thing. That whole idea of spiritual leadership has been put on our husbands as a very huge weight, very heavy. They feel like they have to be a pastor. They feel like they have to have a degree in theology in order to teach their children the Bible when the truth is all they have to do is read it. Mm-hmm. Just read it to your kids yes. and talk about it. You know, I actually did a podcast episode on simplifying family worship for the sake of the dads, you know? So I think this is important that we understand that I think they want to lead, but they need our help. They need us to say, how can I help you with this? Like with my husband, he would not remember every night to read the Bible or at the table at dinner time. He just doesn't remember that. No matter how many days in a row we do it, his brain isn't there. His head is in another box. It's not in the Bible box. So I just had to pull out the Bible and remind him, and he was fully on board. And so, you know, and I could have looked at that and said, well, he's not taking the spiritual leadership because he's not remembering. Okay. Well, you know what? That's okay. He just looked at me one day and said, I want to do this. I just need your help to, you know, to go there, to remember to go there. You know what? I can do that. I can absolutely do that. So these are the little ways that we can really begin to encourage and bolster our husbands towards true leadership in our families. Mm-hmm.
And then it helps our relationship so much to understand the strengths and the differences and yes. to show up in that way. And then can you imagine what a beautiful memory that ends up being if it's presented in that light of, it was so sweet. My mom used to get out the Bible every night. And my dad used to read from it. Right. And it was like a team effort sort of thing. Like what a beautiful mm-hmm. memory that could be mm-hmm. as opposed to like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, my dad was so stupid. He couldn't even remember to get the Bible out every night. So mom had to do it for him.
And that's the thing, how you talk about them. Mm-hmm. This is another mm-hmm. thing. Sorry, I just mm-hmm. have to interject this because yes. how we speak about our husbands matters.
100%.
Whether it's to our children or to other people in front of our children or to our husband in front of our children. Mm-hmm. We have the power to make or break almost their relationship and their respect towards their dad. Mm-hmm. Just needed to say that.
It's so important. I'll tell you, someone said to me the other day, like, oh, you guys have the RV so that when Chris is in the doghouse, that's where he sleeps. And I just didn't even laugh. I said, Chris is never in the doghouse. Like when I think about it, that's not a thing in our relationship. And so, cause my kids are there, they're listening. They listen to how it is I represent their dad. Mm-hmm. And I just don't find that kind of stuff funny because it's not an accurate representation of our relationship. And I don't want to dog him in a world that dogs men and puts them down or like makes fun of women and makes them seem like airheads or anything like that. It just doesn't, it's not part of our family culture. And so I just don't even, you know, if someone tries to like, I get it, you know, maybe someone's trying to relate to us or just be funny or like bring some levity, but I'm like, I'm not going to do it at my husband's expense for sure.
No,
I love what you were saying about being encouraging of them. And they'll know if they are respected or not. I mean, I've had moments in my marriage where my respect for my husband was questioned and as it should have been in that moment, so that we could get to a place of genuine respect from me and genuine respect that is obvious enough that he perceives it and understands it and believes it. Right. And, you know, part of my job is, and you mentioned prayer in the book, you know, there's a whole chapter on prayer. One of the most powerful things I can do to encourage my husband is to pray for him. Mm-hmm. And when you said those words, like I respected, you know, I respect when you, or I respected when you, they actually need to hear those words. They need to hear those words. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that you are doing X, Y, and Z. For my husband, I will never forget the day I first said the words, I am for you. I am for you. And he believed me and I saw it because that's the truth. That's the truth of our marriage. And even if, of course, I'm for him, but have I ever expressed that? Have I ever said that? You know, and saying those words, or I'm praying for you. I pray for you every day. That is so important and so powerful and so encouraging. And we can say these things to our sons too, and our daughters and anyone who's around us, right? These aren't exclusive to like some weird misunderstanding that women should be saying these things to men. We can say this to anybody. I like your shirt. I like your hat. You know, oh my gosh, it's so sunshiny. Are you having a good day? You have such a pretty smile. Like we can encourage people all the time. Like it doesn't have to be just this one thing, but when we're specifically thinking about our sons and men in our life, I think it's really important and something that's overlooked that we can be encouragers and we should be.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that often men come off as like they don't need it, but they really, really do.
They really do.
They really, really do.
They really
and
do.
And especially from their wives.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's one of the best parts of being married, honestly, that you can just like look at someone and admire them so much and be on the inside of someone's personal growth like that. Like it's such an honor
it's like
and it's such
else.
A privilege. There is being married is one of my favoriteest things on the planet for sure. Well, also, I want to acknowledge there will be single moms listening who are raising sons by ourselves. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts or advice for our single moms who are raising sons.
I first want to say that God knows exactly where you are. And he knows the obstacles you have, and those obstacles are they're nothing to him. And he can provide someone or more than someone for your son to be connected with. If he doesn't have a dad in the picture, that's, you know, a good godly role model. Be praying. Start out praying. Ask the Lord. Send somebody. Show me somebody. Open my eyes. Maybe it's somebody at church. Maybe it's a neighbor. But look for that because, well, because we're telling you it's important. It's really, really important. The other thing I really want to suggest that I – a recent resource that I have just, I'm so excited about. It's called Trail Life USA. And it is basically an alternative to Boy Scouts because we know Boy Scouts has gone down a road most of us don't want to be on. It is a very Christian, very solid organization, very tethered soundly to scripture. But there are godly men who don't have sons who participate in this. There's fathers and sons, but then there's also men who are there just to be there for a boy who shows up and doesn't have a dad to be there to do these manly things with him. And so it works on the same thing as, you know, merits and badges and being outdoors and, you know, resilience and getting out there and being men together and doing manly things and camping and all that kind of stuff, survival stuff, all of that. But they have men who are there who have been vetted that that can be matched up with your son. And so there are resources out there. I mean, be careful, obviously, but those are a couple of, I think, really strong ideas that I think would work for just about any mom who is single. Those Trail Life USA groups are all over the United States. So you just go to traillifeusa.com, I think is what it is. And there's a map. You can find someone in your area. So
I love that. We have Trail Life at our church as well.
Oh, and good.
They have such a good time. I have friends whose sons are involved in that. And then there's a girl version of it too. I can't remember what it's called.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
That's there too. I'll link to that in the show notes because I think that's actually a really valuable resource. And I love that so much. You can pray. You can pray about it for sure because it doesn't have to feel lonely or hopeless.
No, God is a good God and he's a provider and he's faithful and he is in many ways filling that husband role for the husband that you don't have and he can give you wisdom and direction and provision.
Amen to that for sure. Yeah,
he loves our kids more than we do, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and sometimes that does, how? And
I know, that's how.
And that's the miracle of it all and I love that so much. Oh my gosh. Well, Torinda, last thought. What do you hope families will take away from your book?
Oh, I think my hope is that they will have a better understanding of what masculinity is, true masculinity is, that they will have an appreciation for it, and that they will be equipped to apply the principles that I share in that book within the four walls of their homes. This isn't about selling a bunch of books or making a bunch of money. This is about each individual family walking out God's calling for their lives and specifically the boys so that they grow into these strong and mighty men. And I'm so hopeful because I think that if even a fraction of families, the trajectory changes for them and they raise these godly men, it will literally change our culture. Mm-hmm. And so I think at the end of the day, I really have the long game in mind.
That's
I have
awesome.
The here, the now, the in the within the four walls of your homes. But then I think beyond that, because I can see beyond that after having raised our kids and having launched them out into the world, how effective just each individual child can be. And then collectively, if there are thousands or tens of thousands of families doing this, in 10 years, we could see a huge shift in the culture.
100%.
So I think that probably seems like a very big, big vision, but I really, that is the desire of my heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to. It starts with our one son at a time,
Absolutely.
One relationship at a time, for sure. Mm-hmm. And then I love that bigger vision. I feel like God put it on my heart too, to stop saying like the culture says, and I've started to say the current culture says, because I hold out hope that the culture is ever changing and the current culture is telling us this and we are changing it and it is happening one mom, one son, one relationship at a time. Oh my gosh, Torinda, this has been so good. My listeners are going to want to connect with you more. Where can they find you?
Well, you can find me at DorindaWilson.com. I also have a podcast, the Torinda Wilson Podcast. We just hit 500 episodes, 3 million downloads.
Oh my gosh.
So there's a lot there. I will give just a little bit of direction in terms of the podcast, because at the top of the list of episodes on the podcast page on my website only, there's a search bar. So a lot of podcasts, you probably like, where do I even begin? Put in some keywords there and then things will come up. Episodes will come up for you. And then, of course, I've got my fourth book coming out. So I've got The Unhurried Homeschooler, Unhurried Grace for a Mom's Heart, which is a devotional, and then The 4-Hour School Day, which you and I have talked about before, and then the newest book, Raising Boys to Men, which is available on Amazon. It is also available at my website. Either place is fine. I'm not sure when this is airing, but
soon, right now. People are listening to it right now.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, if you purchase the book on March 5th or 6th, there's a free incentive there. I'll leave the link with you. You can put it in the show notes. So basically you go purchase the book, you click this link, you put in your order number, you get free access to the audiobook of The Unhurried Homeschooler.
Audiobooks are my jam. I love it so much. Well, Torinda, you are amazing. You are doing the good work. You are showing up with such a loving, compassionate heart. and sharing your story and sharing about your family and how much you've changed and grown together. And you don't hold back, and it is changing our lives. And we appreciate that so very much. So Dorinda, thank you for today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. It was a wonderful conversation.
That's it for this episode of Elevating Motherhood. Thanks again for spending your valuable time with me today. I hope you found some insight and inspiration, or maybe a little of both. If you liked today's show, please leave a review on iTunes. I use your feedback to plan future shows and cover topics that serve you. You can also connect with me on Instagram and Facebook. Links to those accounts are in the show notes. For more information, including today's show notes, head to elevatingmotherhood.com. That's elevatingmotherhood.com. Thanks again, Mama. I appreciate you.